The founder of Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, was recently on trial. The lawsuit claimed that his social media products, especially Instagram and Facebook, were designed in ways that intentionally addict children and teens. The plaintiff says that that contributed to her depression, suicidal thoughts, and harmful social media use. The plaintiff in this case, known only by her initials, KGM, argued that Meta used engagement-boosting design features like recommendation algorithms, beauty filters, and goals to increase time spent that targeted minors, and that the company knew these features could harm youth's mental health but failed to change them. Thanks for tuning into The Commonwealth Matters. I'm your host, Richard Nelson. Joining us to talk further about social media harms to minors and what is being done in Kentucky to protect kids from such harms is Chelsea Yeoman of Alliance Defending Freedom. Chelsea is an attorney concerned about the negative effects of social media on our kids, and she recently testified in front of a Kentucky legislative committee in favor of House Bill 227, which would ban social media from kids 15 and younger in Kentucky without parental permission. Chelsea, welcome to the Commonwealth Matters program.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here today.
Hey, I need to thank you, as I did off air, for taking time to come to Kentucky and to testify in front of a legislative committee that was considering this bill intended to protect minors, young minors, 15 and younger, from social media harm. And I'm going to just go through some of your testimony. I think this is so valuable and important for our listeners to hear. You said in your testimony that social media is harmful to youth because first and foremost, it's addictive. And I'm quoting, a brain exposed frequently to social media closely resembles a brain hooked on the most highly addictive drug, the dopamine release, and this is my term, similar to drug use in studies. Second, it damages mental health to be addicted to social media. It increases in harms like anxiety, depression, and suicide among our youth who are addicted to constant scrolling. So that was your testimony. And I want to go back to somebody who came out with a really important book a couple years ago. Jonathan Haidt, social scientist, professor, wrote a book called The Anxious Generation. And Haidt argued that widespread smartphone and social media use has fundamentally changed the experience of childhood, making it more digitally driven and psychologically stressful than previous generations. And Haidt went on to correlate between the timing of social media adoption and rising rates of depression, anxiety, self-harm, and suicidal behavior among adolescents, especially girls. And these are some of the things that you were getting at in your testimony. So here's my question. Facebook went public back in 2004. I think it was by the early 2010s, 2009, 2010, when it was really in wide use. My question is, why did it take an entire generation to figure out how harmful social media use was with our young kids? And maybe this isn't fair. You're an attorney. You're not a social scientist. But any idea why it took us so long to, it's 22 years from when Facebook first came out to today. Why did it take so long?
We've known for a long time. I think the science is coming out, and sometimes that can take time. Longitudinal studies require years and years to be conducted of data. You need broader sets of data. It's also very expensive to conduct the studies. And so I think the science is just now catching up. But I think common sense has been there for a while. I think any parent, I'm a parent myself, I have three young boys, and I look around at school campuses today and you see kids staring at their phones instead of interacting with each other. You see them, you hear about doom scrolling late at night. You went from having a computer at that time in 2004 and 2006, we all remember having a computer room, right? Where you would go to a room near, maybe if you were lucky, it might have been in the kitchen counter or near a living room where your family's interacting around with you. Well, now all of that's behind closed doors at all hours of the night. And so I think the technology has changed. I also think Facebook has changed. Meta has changed. These algorithms have changed with the invent of AI technology and other types of technology where they can now automatically create a feed for you based on the things you're liking, the types of conversations you're having, even things you purchased on Amazon. They now know what to target you with for advertising. That is all an increase in addictive features over the years. Facebook initially started without having those types of feed loading content, autoplay videos. So the technology has changed as an answer. The way the apps have utilized and figured out how to keep users online and how to maximize their time online, that's part of the product that they're they're out there not selling, but that we're all utilizing.
Chelsea, you went on to say in your testimony before this House Legislative Committee that, and I quote, "Our children's minds are also not commodities because an addicted user is a very profitable user, including a lifelong user." And then you go on to say that these social media platforms are very aware that constant scrolling, autoplay videos, constant push notifications, the feedback loop is what children get addicted to, and that by using their data, by recording everything they do, every comment they make is recorded for life, then they profit off of it. I think that's brilliant how you put that out there, how you unpack that. But I want to go to another area of concern with young people. Couldn't you make a similar argument against certain kinds of foods, high carb, high sugar, MSG-laden foods that are packaged to be kids' foods? I think of breakfast cereals in particular. Can you make a similar argument that you've got something unhealthy, they're targeting kids, they'll have advertising aimed at kids, and they're addictive? These are addictive foods and they're unhealthy foods. Could you make and I know it's a different category, right? But could you make a similar argument that there's another industry that's pushing something unhealthy on children?
I think it's good to talk about where these lines are. You know, the difference between tobacco, which is addictive, and unhealthy sugary foods are pretty big differences to your health and longevity. Of course, sugary foods are bad for you. But when we're talking about anxiety, when we're talking about suicide rates, when we're talking about depression, we're talking about entire generations, perhaps, that have been lost, their social development lost in an unregulated arena. And so I think this is a little bit the difference between you got an entire Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, charged with making sure products, we know what's in the food, ingredients are labeled, you've got your nutritional facts. I mean, there's an entire way that products have to be packaged to a consumer because we as consumers have rights. We have rights to understand what we're engaging with when we're making the choices we're making. And social media and the tech industry, I think at large, has been largely unregulated. And they have not had to care about how they're packaging their product. And I think you're right to talk about it in terms of packaging a product. Like, tobacco industry cannot package in a way and market in a way that's alluring to kids. You have to purchase it behind, for instance, when you go in to purchase tobacco products, they're behind the counter. There's some parameters here meant and designed to protect consumers. And I think that children are our youngest consumers and their minds are the most susceptible because of their lack of development. They don't have the same impulse control. They're socially developing. They're in these kind of vulnerable phases of their lives, these really impactful phases of their lives. And I think we know enough now to say it's time to hold social media platforms, not just accountable, but to say you're responsible for the product you're creating and the way you're packaging it to children. And that's what this bill is about. It's just about packaging.
That's good. I'm old enough to remember the big tobacco lawsuits back in the 1990s under the Clinton administration. And one of the things I recall, Chelsea, was the Joe Camel logo on packs of cigarettes, that was targeted towards kids, towards minor kids. They somehow found that it was meant to reach a younger generation. And they specifically found that you're targeting kids, you can't do that. And that added to some of the settlement, the huge settlement that the tobacco companies ended up paying, which, by the way, Kentucky benefited from because we're one of the top tobacco producing states. But we realized then, as you point out, there's different categories here and there's different levels of harm. There's different harms that impact children to a greater level. And certainly alcohol, tobacco, vaping, I guess in recent years, that's we realize that that's a real harm to minors. And you should not target minors to engage in these behaviors. And what you're doing, along with ADF, is it's groundbreaking work because, as you just said, there are no regulations on this industry. It's the Wild West. And it kind of does remind me of the lawsuit against big tobacco back in the 1990s. Now, I want to go to an objection that was brought up in the committee hearing just the other week. There was a group called the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. FIRE is their acronym. And they argue that the bill is unconstitutional, that it's overly restrictive, and they said some other things. Could you tell us how is this different, this proposal, House Bill 227, different from other laws intended to protect kids from social media harms? And those laws were struck down in court or held up in court. I know Utah for sure. Maybe there were some other states where there are laws and efforts made to protect minors. But how is this law different from those?
That is a great question. It's obviously a very complicated issue because we have lots of rights that we at ADF have spent our entire mission protecting. First Amendment rights, rights of speech, rights of conscience, rights of conduct. So those are core to the Alliance Defending Freedom values. And with that in mind, we wanted to be very careful to create a solution that does more good than harm, particularly related to our civil rights. And so we want children to have a First Amendment right to access information and to speak and create and communicate. We also want to protect the First Amendment rights of parents. We want to protect the First Amendment rights of our community, that we don't all have to produce, for instance, a driver's license or an ID to a corporation in order to access something. That would be a really big burden. And so in that vein, when you look at some of the other bills that have been passed, I think they all have incredible goals. We all have the same goal. We want to see children protected, not exploited. We don't want our data to be exploited in data wars by the most powerful and wealthy companies, maybe even in history. And so towards that end, some bills have been struck down, and we have had the benefit of hindsight and looking at those cases, looking at what the judges have said and said, okay, what we really care about is not necessarily with this bill the type of content children are accessing, because whether a child is scrolling, one study said kids are picking up their phone in the sixth and seventh grade about 100 times a day at a minimum, and some as many as 700 times a day for more addicted users. That's the problem we're after. Whether that's picking up the phone to look at cat videos or whether that's picking up the phone to look at more nefarious content that's directed towards them by strangers and strange algorithms, we're saying that the features are the problem. And the science says that the features are the problem. And so once you have, this bill says, once you have a minor that's been identified, these social media platforms are already running data analytics and demographics on all their users to package and sell that data to advertisers. They know, Google says, within about 170 likes, how old a user is. Some platforms know within a few hours. And so we say, once they have that idea of how old a user is with concrete confidence, they are then responsible for shutting down the child's account automatically. And that's really different than other bills that have been passed. If a minor or a child wants to have an account, wants to access social media, they can with their parents' involvement. And so we don't have strangers contacting them. We don't have auto scroll videos. So first, then your parent would give them permission to join social media. And then at that point, we still want to protect children. We still don't want children joining and being addicted. That's the core heart of this bill is to protect their young minds. And so at that point, social media companies have a responsibility to package their product in a way that doesn't hurt children. And that means no autoplay. We're not using their data to profit off them with advertising. There's limits and parameters. We're saying we're making it a safer playground for these kids to operate in once they engage with social media.
Hi, this is Mike Harmon, State Outreach Director for the Commonwealth Policy Center. Some of you may remember me as Kentucky's former state auditor or as a former state representative, but I want to speak with you today about the great work of the Commonwealth Policy Center. We look to find, educate, and elevate leaders who have a biblical worldview. And if that's something that you value as well, then I would ask that you become a CPC Insider. For just $25 a month, we will send you our quarterly printed newsletter, our monthly email newsletter, our Insider Live with CPC, and you will receive invitations to special events we hold throughout the year. If that's something that you can help with, please go to commonwealthpolicycenter.org, hit the donate tab, and sign up for a $25 a month reoccurring donation. Thank you. God bless.
Chelsea, it's interesting you use that word playground. When I was younger, and I'm a little bit younger than you, I grew up in an age where there were no cell phones, there was no internet, didn't have computers. Definitely social media wasn't on anybody's radar. But we were told when we were in kindergarten, first grade, when you're at the playground and a stranger approaches you and offers you candy, or if a stranger pulls up in a car and says to come over here, you're told to run. We were warned about strangers. And I find it interesting that we don't have a similar warning. At least I'm not hearing it loud and clear. Now, maybe it's happening and I've missed it, but I'm not hearing this warning to our young people on social media. Hey, there are strangers out there who have bad designs and bad motives, and you've got to watch out for it. Are you aware? Is there anybody
I mean, other than the effort to restrict social media and to protect kids, as we're talking about, is anybody warning kids and parents that there are predators on social media trying to get access to your kids?
I hope so. I hope that, I know the conversations happen sometimes at the school level, although most of our schools hand kids tablets beginning in kindergarten. And so you can say all day long, it's the parent, you know, the parent's responsibilities, just don't give them a cell phone, but they are going to go to school 7 and 8 hours a day, unless you're homeschooling or in a different type of school environment. And they're going to have a tablet in front of them that has internet access, firewalls that are easy to get around. And so all of that is a huge challenge. I use the metaphor, it's like your kid is on the playground playing, and it's not just a stranger. It's a stranger from a company who has a video camera. And mm-hmm. without your consent as a parent, they walk up to your child who's playing with other kids, playing ball, and they record everything. All the conversations happening, how the kids interact, how they're playing with each other, who throws the ball the best. And then they get to take that video and take it back to their company and figure out how to target those kids with advertisements. And the data is gone. It's gone for life. And the parents at no point consented to a lifelong contract with these social media platforms regarding their kids, their interactions, their interests, their conversations. It's wild what we have allowed to happen. And I think it's just time. It's time. We know enough. I'm really grateful for Kentucky leading the charge on this. Representative Lockett is leading the charge on this, as is leadership in the House. And we're hopeful for the Senate next. It's time for them to start to pass some parameters on these social media companies. And I'm grateful to Kentucky for leading the way.
Chelsea, just to be clear, this bill, House Bill 227, only affects large social media platforms. They've got to have at least $1 billion in advertising revenues a year. So you're looking at the Facebook, the Instagram, the Twitter, that kind of thing. They also, these are the companies that also have to have in place an age estimation device, which I understand that they all the big platforms can tell ages, is and that's how you testified, that they use the age estimation to sell advertising spots. And as far as the restriction, it would keep those 15, it's 15 and younger, correct? Or is it under 15? 15-year-olds?
It's 15 and younger.
Okay. Want to be accurate about that. But it would keep those 15 and younger off of these social media platforms unless a parent consents to their social media use, correct?
That's right. That's right.
Okay. So, so that's the bill. It's not banning or restricting. It's more of an opt-in. It's recognizing, I guess, the platforms in what they're already capable of doing, the age estimation. And then it's an opt-in. If parents want their 13 or 14-year-old to be on social media, which my guess is that they don't, most parents don't, I think there's peer pressure. I think that's why 13 and 14-year-olds are on it, because their peers in school are on it. But if it was a across the board restriction, unless parents opt in, I think more parents would say, no, we don't want that. But those are the proposals as it's in place. You said that this bill protects the First Amendment rights of parents, protects the First Amendment rights of social media companies, and it's a content neutral bill. Could you expand on this and why you think that this framework you have is going to be upheld in courts?
Yes, I would love to expand on that. I think it's pretty intuitive to all of us what our rights are, that we can't have the government restrict our ability to speak, our ability to act in conjunction with our convictions. We have a right to all types of free speech. It is one of our strongest rights that's protected under the law. With that in mind, we really wanted to get after the core value of this, which is the features. And that's how this bill is different than a lot of other bills. You might see obscenity bills, so pornography bills. You know, that is the type of regulation that is going to regulate the types of content kids access or are exposed to. And those are really good laws, but they're really hard to get upheld. And so we're not really interested in a content-based regulation. What can kids see or not see, who can they interact with? Those would all be violations of their First Amendment rights, depending on how they're drafted. This bill is very carefully drafted to say the product packaging is the issue. We know that that's what's causing the harm because they talk about it. And you mentioned earlier, you know, Mark Zuckerberg's trial, and there's 1,500 trials right now against Meta, is my understanding. In some of that discovery, there's comments from Meta employees who are saying, you know, if we can get a child on here for life, they're a lifelong user, we're going to get $250 per kid in their lifetime, maybe even more. And so they're having these discussions about, we're selling crack, we're selling we're drug pushers, are quotes that I've seen from some of these resources that I think are accurate.
Wait, let me interrupt. To be clear, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you're saying you have documented conversations with some of the employees at Meta or other big tech firms talking about drug pushers, talking about this being like crack. Is that what I just heard?
They're statements from other cases that have come out publicly in the discovery process. They've got emails. And so I think it's something that when you really look into it, it's evident they're aware because their business model, and this is why there haven't been natural market, I think, solutions, because their business model is designed to keep users on for longer so they can advertise to them, sell more advertising spaces. That's the model. It's not a free service. They're using your data as the commodity. And we can get into that discussion. But the point being, the way their features operate are to serve their business model. There's not a market solution that's going to help them want to be less profitable. And so that's where a law like this is going to come in and really help and really say, all right, we're going to put some parameters on who you can market to. There's vulnerable ages that are off limits. And it's also consistent with federal law. You know, federal law says if you're a user under the age of 13, you have to have verified parental consent to have your data collected. And so we're applying that, but we're increasing it up to 15. And then we care very much what the presentation to the child is.
I saw one of Zuckerberg's comments regarding age restrictions on Meta and on the related platforms. He said that 13-year-olds are not allowed to be on it. However, he also said that they have a hard time determining who's 13. Or let me rephrase that. He was saying that 13-year-olds lie about their age and their identity, and therefore he implicitly acknowledge there's a lot of 13-year-olds on it. Is that true? Could they be more effective in keeping those 13-year-olds off, once even those that are lying about their age?
Well, yes. And that's why I think this bill is so interesting, because instead of relying on the user to be honest about their age, it says the social media platforms know. I mean, this is their bread and butter, is knowing their users so that they can sell the spot on your algorithm to advertisers. And the more accurate that they are, the more they can charge for that spot, the more money they make. And so if the social media platform knows, they have a responsibility to shut it down. And that's really the difference between this bill and clicking a box.
Chelsea, what kind of First Amendment rights do young people have? We know that they're citizens, but they don't have the same express civil rights that adults have. They can't vote, for example. But what is a First Amendment? And so what made me think of this and bring this up, you talked about this bill does not infringe on the First Amendment rights of minors. And yet Kentucky passed a law last year that kept minors off of pornographic websites. There was an age verification provision that was passed into law. And it said, look, if you're under 18, you're not going to be getting on these websites. That led to Pornhub leaving the state, to which I say good riddance. Getting back to what are the First Amendment rights of free speech of minors? What does that look like?
Yes. Well, minors do have First Amendment rights to free speech, freedom of conscience, religion, the right to worship. They do have all the same rights. There's a few parameters that are different. They have a right. There's such a thing as parental rights. And so that's really some of the heart of this bill, is that parents care most about their children. They love their children most. They know their children most. They know how to protect their children, and they're charged with caring for their children. And so to the extent that social media has, as we talked about earlier, strangers accessing their children, sending them information, regardless of what that content is, the point is that parents have a right to protect their children and raise them. And so putting them back in the driver's seat is at the core of that. And then the other types of rights you're alluding to would be when you're talking about obscenity or pornography laws. The courts have held you can regulate speech, but a state has to have a compelling interest in doing that. It's a really high bar. And the state has to say, you know, it's a matter of safety, public safety. And courts have held protecting children from pornography is a compelling state interest. The state has the utmost interest in that. And so when you think of that, in a criminal context, you could There's crimes of solicitation. That's a speech limitation right there. You don't have a right to solicit, you know, murder for hire. You don't have a right to solicit prostitution or to aid and abet in committing a crime verbally. Those are parameters on speech. So speech has its limits, but you have to have a very compelling state interest in public safety for that to be upheld. And I don't know in a social media context that that's a battle that we're seeing worth fighting, because what we're really after is the issues, the mental health crisis that is being caused by the addiction to social media. And that's, regardless of content, going to be an issue.
Close out the program. We've just got just a minute and a half or so talking about the Zuckerberg case. Now, just before that case went to trial, there was a settlement before it went to case. I believe it was TikTok, I want to say, that settled with this, one of the clients or one of the plaintiffs. What's your take on the Zuckerberg case and the ruling that may come out? Some are saying, Chelsea, that it's a bellwether that could influence these other 1,500 cases, I guess maybe 1,500 lawsuits against Meta right now from others who have been harmed by it. Do you think that this is going to be, could set the tone or set the stage where these other cases might settle out of court? Or is it a bellwether? What are your thoughts on the ruling that
It's certainly possible. I mean, when we're looking at this volume of cases, you've got a product liability problem. I would have to look into some comparators, but it's a significant volume of cases against Meta. They have a significant amount of users. You know, I think it will be telling how the case goes. I will say this, every case is a little bit different. Every mind is a little bit different. And so this is where there's going to be nuance probably between what they're willing to settle and not in a practical sense. I think they're trying to, you know, play this off as, well, some people have mental health problems and that's really the issue. What the studies indicate, however, is anxiety is increased across the board. And they've even started having different types of anxieties. Types of anxiety that they've identified for social media use. And so regardless of the user's mental veracity or strength or mental health issues, social media addiction has the same dopamine impact they're showing as drug use. The other thing it's doing is socially stunting our kids. Some studies show things like children utilizing it as more of a pacifier. If they're struggling, if they don't have that emotional resilience, they go to their cell phone. If they don't have enough impulse control, they're going to their cell phone more easily. So that's a user by user issue, but the product problem is the same. And when you also think about the mental health crisis, you know, most of these kids in these studies said they're not better off for social media use. I think a lot of us might agree with that. Are we better off with cell phones in our pocket, scrolling at night instead of interacting with our loved ones? I know my answer to that question, but when you're talking about young minds, it's a different threshold that needs to be met. It needs to be a higher threshold of a product that we're handing to our kids.
Yeah, very good. Chelsea Yeoman with Alliance Defending Freedom, thank you so much for joining us on the Commonwealth Matters and for helping us here in Kentucky create a better environment to make social media a safer place for children and for all of us. Thank you. Keep up the good work and may God bless you.
Well, thank you. God bless you as well.